for 8 days. Chapter 36. I invited you to hunt, Naga-san, not to repeat views I've already heard, Toranaga said. I beg you, father, for the last time, stop the training, outlaw guns, destroy the barbarian, declare the experiment a failure, and have done with this obscenity. No, for the last time. The hooded falcon on Toranaga's gloved hand shifted uneasily at the unaccustomed menace in her master's voice, and she hissed irritably. They were in the brush, beaters and guards well out of earshot, the day sweltering and dank and overcast. Naga's chin jutted. Very well, but it's still my duty to remind you that you're in danger here, and to demand again, with due politeness, now for the last time, that you leave Anjiro today. No, also for the last time. Then take my head. I already have your head. Then take it today, now, or let me end my life, since you won't take good advice. Learn patience, puppy. How can I be patient when I see you destroying yourself? It's my duty to point it out to you. You stay here hunting and wasting time while your enemies are pulling the whole world down on you. The regents meet tomorrow. 4/5 of all daimyos in Japan are either at Osaka already or on the way there. You're the only important one to refuse. Now you'll be impeached. Then nothing can save you. At the very least, you should be home at Edo, surrounded by the legions. Here, you're naked. We can't protect you. We've barely 1,000 men. And hasn't Yabu-san mobilized all Izu? He's got more than 8,000 men within 20 li, another 6 closing his borders. You know spies say he has a fleet waiting northward to sink you if you try to escape by galley. You're his prisoner again. Don't you see that? One carrier pigeon from Ishido, and Yabu can destroy you whenever he wants. How do you know he isn't planning treachery with Ishido? I'm sure he's considering it. I would, if I were he. Wouldn't you? No, I wouldn't. Then you'd soon be dead, which would be absolutely merited. But so would all your family, all your clan, and all your vassals, which would be absolutely unforgivable. You're a stupid, truculent fool. You won't use your mind. You won't listen. You won't learn. You won't curb your tongue or your temper. You let yourself be manipulated in the most childish way and believe that everything can be solved with the edge of your sword. The only reason I don't take your stupid head or let you end your present worthless life is because you're young. Because I used to think you had some possibilities. Your mistakes are not malicious. There's no guile in you, and your loyalty's unquestioned. But if you don't quickly learn patience and self-discipline, I'll take away your samurai status and order you and all your generations into the peasant class! Toranaga's right fist slammed his saddle, and the falcon let out a piercing, nervous scream. Do you understand? Naga was in shock. In his whole life, Naga had never seen his father shout with rage or lose his temper, or even heard of him doing so. Many times he had felt the bite of his tongue, but with justification. Naga knew he made many mistakes, but always his father had turned it so that what he had done no longer seemed as stupid as it had at first. For instance, when Toranaga had shown him how he had fallen into Omi's, or Yabu's, trap about Jozen, he had had to be physically stopped from charging off at once to murder them both. But Toranaga had ordered his private guards to pour cold water over Naga until he was rational, and had calmly explained that he, Naga, had helped his father immeasurably by eliminating Jozen's menace. But it would have been better if you'd known you were being manipulated into the action. Be patient, my son. Everything comes with patience, Toranaga had counseled. Soon you'll be able to manipulate them. What you did was very good, but you must learn to reason what's in a man's mind if you're to be of any use to yourself. or to your lord. I need leaders. I've fanatics enough. Boise's father had been reasonable and forgiving, but today... Naga leapt off his horse and knelt abjectly.
Please forgive me, father. I never meant to make you angry. It's only because I'm frantic with worry over your safety. Please excuse me for disturbing the harmony. Hold your tongue!
Toranaga bellowed, causing his horse to shy. Frantically, Toranaga held on with his knees and pulled the reins tighter in his right hand, the horse skittering. Off balance, his falcon began to bait, to jump off his fist, her wings fluttering wildly, screaming her ear-shattering,
Hick! Hick, 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 hick!
Infuriated by the unaccustomed and unwelcome agitation surrounding her.
There, my beauty, there!
Toranaga desperately tried to settle her and gain control of the horse as Naga jumped for the horse's head. He caught the bridle and just managed to stop the horse from bolting. The falcon was screaming furiously. At length, reluctantly, she settled back on Toranaga's expert glove, held firmly by her thong jesses. But her wings still pulsated nervously, the bells on her feet jangling shrilly.
Hick, 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 hick!
She shrieked a final time.
There, there, my beauty. There. Everything's all right.
Toranaga said soothingly, his face still mottled with rage, then turned on Naga, trying to keep the animosity out of his tone for the falcon's sake.
If you've ruined her condition today, I'll...
At that instant, one of the beaters halloed warningly. Immediately, Toranaga slipped off the falcon's hood with his right hand, gave her a moment to adjust to her surroundings, then launched her. She was long-winged, a peregrine, her name Tetsuko, Lady of Steel, and she whooshed up into the sky, circling to her station 600 feet above Toranaga, waiting for her prey to be flushed, her nervousness forgotten. Then, turning on the downwind pass, she saw the dog sent in and the covey of pheasants scattered in a wild flurry of wing beatings. She marked her prey, heeled over and stooped, closed her wings and dived relentlessly, her talons ready to hack. She came hurtling down, but the old cock pheasant, twice her size, sideslipped, and in panic, tore arrows straight for the safety of a copse of trees, 200 paces away. Tetsuko recovered, opened her wings, charging headlong after her quarry. She gained altitude, and then, once more vertically above the cock, again stooped, hacked viciously, and again missed. Toranaga excitedly shouted encouragement, warning of the danger ahead. Naga forgotten. With a frantic clattering of wings, the cock was streaking for the protection of the trees. The peregrine, again whirling high above, stooped and came slashing down. But she was too late. The wily pheasant vanished. Careless of her own safety, the falcon crashed through the leaves and branches, ferociously seeking her victim, then recovered and flashed into the open once more, screeching with rage, to rush high above the copse. At that moment, a covey of partridge was flushed and whirred away, staying close to the ground seeking safety, darting this way and that, cunningly following the contours of the earth. Tetsuko marked one, folded her wings, and fell like a stone. This time she did not miss. One vicious hack of her hind talons as she passed broke the partridge's neck. The bird crashed to the ground in a bursting cloud of feathers. But instead of following her kill to the earth, or binding it to her and landing with it, she soared screaming into the sky, climbing higher and ever higher. Anxiously, Toranaga took out the lure, a small dead bird tied to a thin rope, and whirred it around his head. But Tetsuko was not tempted back. Now she was a tiny speck in the sky, and Toranaga was sure that he had lost her, that she had decided to leave him, to go back to the wilds, to kill at her whim and not at his whim, to eat when she wanted and not when he decided, and to fly where the winds bore her or fancy took her, masterless and forever free. Toranaga watched her, not sad, but just a little lonely. She was a wild creature, and Toranaga, like all falconers, knew he was only a temporary earthbound master. Alone he had climbed to her eyrie in the Hakone Mountains and taken her from the nest as a fledgling, and trained her,
cherished her, and given her her first kill. Now he could hardly see her circling there, riding the Thermal so gloriously, and he wished, achingly, that he too could ride the Empyrean, away from the iniquities of Earth. Then the old cock pheasant casually broke from the trees to feed once more, and Tetsuko stooped, plummeting from the heavens, a tiny streamlined weapon of death, her claws ready for the coup de grace. The cock pheasant died instantly, feathers bursting from him on impact, but she held on, falling with him to let go, her wings slashing the air to break violently at the very last second. Then she closed her wings and settled on her kill. She held it in her claws and began to pluck it with her beak prior to eating. But before she could eat, Torunaga rode up. She stopped, distracted. Her merciless brown eyes, ringed with yellow series, watched as he dismounted, her ears listening to his cooing praise of her skill and bravery. And then, because she was hungry, and he the giver of food, and also because he was patient and made no sudden movement, but knelt gently, she allowed him to come closer. Torunaga was complimenting her softly. He took out his hunting knife and split the pheasant's head to allow Tetsuko to feed on the brains. As she began to feast on this tidbit, at his whim, he cut off the head and she came effortlessly onto his fist, where she was accustomed to feed. All the time, Torunaga praised her, and when she'd finished this morsel, he stroked her gently and complimented her lavishly. She bobbed and hissed her contentment, glad to be safely back on the fist once more, where she could eat. For, of course, ever since she had been taken from the nest, the fist was the only place she'd ever been allowed to feed, her food always given to her by Torunaga personally. She began to preen herself, ready for another death. Because Tetsuko had flown so well, Torunaga decided to let her gorge and fly her no more today. He gave her a small bird that he had already plucked and opened for her. When she was halfway through her meal, he slipped on her hood. She continued to feed contentedly through the hood. When she had finished and began to preen herself again, he picked up the cock pheasant, bagged it, and beckoned his falconer, who had waited with the beaters. Exhilarated, they discussed the glory of the kill and counted the bag. There was a hare, a brace of quail, and the cock pheasant. Torunaga dismissed the falconer and the beaters, sending them back to camp with all the falcons. His guards waited downwind. Now he turned his attention to Naga.
So?
Naga knelt beside his horse, bowed.
You're completely correct, sir. What you said about me. I apologize for offending you. But not for giving me bad advice. I beg you to put me with someone who can teach me so that I'll never do that. I never want to give you bad advice. Never.
Good. You'll spend part of every day talking with the Anjin son, learning what he knows. He can be one of your teachers.
Him?
Yes. That may teach you some discipline. And if you can get it through that rock you have between your ears to listen, you'll certainly learn things of value to you. You might even learn something of value to me.
Naga stared sullenly at the ground.
I want you to know everything he knows about guns, cannon, and warfare. You'll become my expert. Yes, and I want you to be very expert.
Naga said nothing.
And I want you to become his friend.
How can I do that, sir?
Why don't you think of a way? Why don't you use your head?
I'll try. I swear I'll try.
I want you to do better than that. You're ordered to succeed. Use some Christian charity. You should have learned enough to do that, eh?
Naga scowled.
That's impossible to learn, much as I tried. It's the truth. All Tsuku-san talked was dogma and nonsense that would make any man vomit. Christians for peasants, not samurai. Don't kill, don't take more than one woman, and 50 other stupidities. I obeyed you then, and I'll obey you now. I always obey. Why not just let me do the things I can, sire?
I'll become Christian if that's what you want, but I can't believe it. It's all manure, and... I apologize for speaking. I'll become the Anjin-san's friend. I will.
Good. And remember, he's worth 20,000 times his own weight in raw silk. And he's got more knowledge than you'll have in 20 lifetimes.
Naga held himself in check and nodded dutifully in agreement.
Good. You'll be leading two of the battalions, Omi-san too, and one will be held in reserve under Buntaro.
And the other four, sire?
We haven't guns enough for them. That was a feint to put Yabu off the scent,
Toranaga said, throwing his son a morsel.
Sire, that was just an excuse to bring another 1,000 men here. Don't they arrive tomorrow? With 2,000 men, I can hold Anjiro and escape, if need be. Eh? But Yabu-san can still...
Naga bit back the comment, knowing that once more he was sure to make a mistaken judgment.
Why is it I'm so stupid? He asked bitterly. Why can't I see things like you do? Or like Sudara-san? I want to help, to be of use. I don't want to provoke you all the time.
Then learn patience, my son, and curb your temper. Your time will come soon enough.
Sir?
Toranaga was suddenly weary of being patient. He looked up at the sky.
I think I'll sleep for a while.
At once, Naga took off the saddle and the horse blanket and laid them on the ground as a samurai bed. Toranaga thanked him and watched him place sentries. When he was sure that everything was correct and safe, he lay down and closed his eyes. But he did not want to sleep, only to think. He knew it was an extremely bad sign that he had lost his temper.
You're fortunate it was only in front of Naga, who doesn't know any better, he told himself. If that had happened near Omi or Yabu, they'd have realized at once that you're almost frantic with worry, and such knowledge might easily inspire them to treachery. You were fortunate this time. Tetsuko put everything into proportion. But for her, you might have let others see your rage, and that would have been insanity. What a beautiful flight. Learn from her. Naga's got to be treated like a falcon. Doesn't he scream and bait like the best of them? Naga's only problem is that he's being flown at the wrong game. His game is combat and sudden death. And he'll have that soon enough.
Toranaga's anxiety began to return.
What's going on in Osaka? I miscalculated badly about the daimyos, who would accept and who would reject the summons. Why haven't I heard? Am I betrayed? So many dangers around me. What about the Anjin-san? He's a falcon, too, but he isn't broken to the fist yet, as Yabu and Mariko claim. What's his prey? His prey is the black ship and the Rodriguez Anjin. And the ugly, arrogant little captain general who's not long for this earth. And all the black-robed priests, and all the stinking hairy priests, all Portuguese and all Spaniards and Turkmen, whoever they are, and Islamers, whoever they are, not forgetting Omi and Yabu and Buntaro and Ishido and me.
Toranaga turned over to get more comfortable and smiled to himself.
But the Anjin-san's not a long-winged falcon, a hawk of the lure, that you fly free above you to stoop at a particular quarry. He's more like a short-winged hawk, a hawk of the fist, that you fly direct from the fist to kill anything that moves. Say a goshawk that'll take partridge or a hare 3 times her own weight. Rats, cats, dogs, woodcock, starlings, rooks, overtaking them with fantastic short bursts of speed to kill with a single crush of her talons. The hawk that detests the hood and won't accept it just sits on your wrist, arrogant, dangerous, self-sufficient, pitiless, yellow-eyed, a fine friend and foul-tempered if the mood's on her. Yes,
The Anjin San's a short wing. Whom do I fly him at?
Omi?
Not yet.
Yabu?
Not yet.
Buntaro?
Why did the Anjin San really go after Buntaro with pistols? Because of Mariko, of course. But have they pillowed? They've had plenty of opportunity. I think yes. Lavish, she said that first day. Good. Nothing wrong in their pillowing. Buntaro was believed dead, providing it's a perpetual secret. But the Anjin San was stupid to risk so much over another man's woman. Aren't there always 1,000 other, free and unattached, equally pretty, equally small or big or fine or tight or highborn or whatever, without the hazard of belonging elsewhere? He acted like a stupid, jealous barbarian. Remember the Rodriguez Anjin? Didn't he duel and kill another barbarian, according to their custom, just to take a low-class merchant's daughter that he then married in Nagasaki? Didn't the Daiko let this murder go unavenged, against my advice, because it was only a barbarian death, and not one of ours? Stupid to have two laws, one for us, one for them. There should be only one. There must be only one law. No, I won't fly the Anjin San at Buntaro. I need that fool. But whether those two pillowed or not, I hope the thought never occurs to Buntaro. Then I would have to kill Buntaro quickly, for no force on earth would stop him from killing the Anjin San and Mariko San, and I need them more than Buntaro. Should I eliminate Buntaro now? The moment Buntaro had sobered up, Torunaga had sent for him. How dare you put your interest in front of mine? How long will Mariko-san be unable to interpret? The doctor said, a few days, sir. I apologize for all the trouble. I made it very clear. I needed her services for another 20 days. Don't you remember? Yes, I'm sorry. If she'd displeased you, a few slaps on the buttocks would have been more than enough. All women need that from time to time. But more is loutish. You've selfishly jeopardized the training and acted like a bovine peasant. Without her, I can't talk to the Anjin San. Yes, I know, Lord. I'm sorry. It's the first time I've hit her. It's just... sometimes she drives me insane so much that I can't seem to see. Why don't you divorce her, then? Or send her away? Or kill her? Or order her to cut her throat when I've no further use for her? I can't. I can't, Lord, Buntaro had said. I've wanted her from the first moment I saw her. When we were married, the first time, she was everything a man could want. I thought I was blessed. You remember how every daimyo in the realm wanted her? Then I sent her away, to protect her after the filthy assassination, pretending to be disgusted with her for her safety. And then... when the Taiko told me to bring her back years later, she excited me even more. The truth is, I expected her to be grateful and took her as a man will, and didn't care about the little things a woman wants, like poems and flowers. But she'd changed. She was as faithful as ever, but just ice. Always asking for death, for me to kill her. Buntaro was frantic. I can't kill her, or allow her to kill herself. She's tainted my son, and makes me detest other women, but I can't rid myself of her. I've tried being kind, but always the ice is there, and it drives me mad. When I came back from Korea, and heard she'd converted to this nonsense Christian religion, I was amused. For what does any stupid religion matter? I was going to tease her about it, but before I knew what was happening... I had my knife at her throat and swore I'd cut her if she didn't renounce it. Of course she wouldn't renounce it. What samurai would under such a threat, ne? She just looked up at me with those eyes of hers and told me to go on. Please cut me, Lord, she said. Here, let me hold my head back for you.
I pray God I'll bleed to death, she said. I didn't cut her, sire. I took her. But I did cut off the hair and ears of some of her ladies who had encouraged her to become Christian and turned them out of the castle. And I did the same to her foster mother and cut off her nose as well. Vile-tempered old hag. And then Mariko said, because I'd punished her ladies, the next time I came to her bed uninvited, she'd commit seppuku in any way she could at once. In spite of her duty to you, in spite of her duty to the family, even in spite of the commandments of her Christian God.
Tears of rage were running down his cheeks, unheeded.
I can't kill her, much as I want to. I can't kill Akechi Jinsei's daughter, much as she deserves it.
Torunaga had let Buntaro rant on until he was spent, then dismissed him, ordering him to stay totally away from Mariko until he considered what was to be done. He dispatched his own doctor to examine her. The report was favorable. Bruises, but no internal damage. For his own safety, because he expected treachery and the sand of time was running out, Torunaga decided to increase the pressure on all of them. He ordered Mariko into Omi's house with instructions to rest, to stay within the confines of the house and completely out of the Anjin-san's way. Next, he had summoned the Anjin-san and pretended irritation when it was clear they could hardly converse at all, dismissing him peremptorily. All training was intensified. Cadres were sent on forced marches. Naga was ordered to take the Anjin-san along and walk him into the ground. But Naga didn't walk the Anjin-san into the ground. So he tried himself. He led a battalion 11 hours over the hills. The Anjin-san kept up, not with the front rank, but still he kept up. Back again at Anjiro, the Anjin-san said in his almost incomprehensible gibberish, hardly able to stand,
Torunaga-sama, I walk can. I guns training can. So sorry, no possibles two at same timings, ne?
Torunaga smiled now, lying under the overcast, waiting for the rain, warmed by the game of breaking blackthorn to the fist.
He's a short wing, all right. Mariko's equally tough, equally intelligent, but more brilliant. And she's got a ruthlessness that he'll never have. She's like a peregrine, like Tetsuko. The best. Why is it the female hawk, the falcon, is always bigger and faster and stronger than the male? Always better than the male? They're all hawks. She, Buntaro, Yabu, Omi, Hujiko, Ochiba, Naga, and all my sons and my daughters and women and vassals, and all my enemies. All hawks, or pray for hawks. I must get Naga into position high over his quarry, and let him stoop. Who should it be? Omi or Yabu?
What Naga had said about Yabu was true.
So, Yabu-san, what have you decided?
He had asked the second day.
I'm not going to Osaka until you go, sire. I've ordered all Izu mobilized.
Ishido will impeach you.
He'll impeach you first, sire, and if the Kanto falls, Izu falls. I made a solemn bargain with you. I'm on your side. The Kashigi honor their bargains.
I'm equally honored to have you as an ally.
He had lied, pleased that Yabu had once more done what he had planned for him to do. The next day, Yabu had assembled a host and asked him to review it, and then, in front of all his men, knelt formally and offered himself as vassal.
You acknowledge me, your feudal lord?
Torunaga had said.
Yes, and all the men of Izu. And, lord, please accept this gift as a token of filial duty.
Still on his knees, Yabu had offered his Murasama sword.
This is the sword that murdered your grandfather. That's not possible.
Yabu had told him the history of the sword, how it had come down to him over the years, and how, only recently, he had learned of its true identity. He summoned Suo. The old man told what he had witnessed when he himself was little more than a boy.
"It's true, Lord," Suo had said proudly. "No man saw Obata's father break the sword or cast it into the sea. And I swear by my hope of samurai rebirth that I served your grandfather, Lord Chikitada. I served him faithfully until that day he died. I was there. I swear it."
Toranaga had accepted the sword. It seemed to quiver with malevolence in his hand. He had always scoffed at the legend that certain swords possessed a killing urge of their own, that some swords needed to leap out of the scabbard to drink blood. But now Toranaga believed it. He shuddered, remembering that day.
"Why do Murasama blades hate us? One killed my grandfather. Another almost cut off my arm when I was 6, an unexplained accident. No one near, but still my sword arm was slashed, and I nearly bled to death. A third decapitated my firstborn son."
"Sir," Yabu had said, "such a befouled blade shouldn't be allowed to live, nay? Let me take it out to sea and drown it, so that this sword at least can never threaten you or your descendants."
"Yes, yes,"
he had muttered, thankful that Yabu had made the suggestion.
"Do it now."
And only when the sword had sunk out of sight, into the very deep, witnessed by his own men, had his heart begun to pump normally. He had thanked Yabu, ordered taxes to be stabilized at 60 parts for peasants, 40 for their lords, and had given him Izu as his fief. So everything was as before, except that now all power in Izu belonged to Toranaga, if he wished to take it back. Toranaga turned over to ease the ache in his sword arm, and settled again more comfortably, enjoying the nearness of the earth, gaining strength from it, as always.
"That blade's gone, never to return." "Good. But remember what the old Chinese soothsayer foretold," he thought. "That you would die by the sword. But whose sword? And is it to be by my own hand, or another's?" "I'll know when I know," he told himself without fear. "Now sleep. Karma is karma. Be thou of Zen. Remember, in tranquility, that the absolute, the Tao, is within thee, that no priest or cult or dogma or book or saying or teaching or teacher stands between thou and it. Know that good and evil are irrelevant, I and thou irrelevant, inside and outside irrelevant, as are life and death. Enter into the sphere where there is no fear of death, nor hope of afterlife, where thou art free of the impediments of life or the needs of salvation. Thou art thyself the Tao. Be thou, now, a rock against which the waves of life rush in vain."
The faint shout brought Toranaga out of his meditation, and he leaped to his feet. Naga was excitedly pointing westward. All eyes followed his point. The carrier pigeon was flying in a direct line for Anjiro from the west. She fluttered into a distant tree to rest for a moment, then took off once more as rain began to fall. Far to the west, in her wake, was Osaka. Chapter 37. The handler at the pigeon coop held the bird gently but firmly as Toranaga stripped off his sodden clothes. He had galloped back through the downpour. Naga and other samurai anxiously crowded the small doorway, careless of the warm rain, which still fell in torrents, drumming on the tiled roof. Carefully, Toranaga dried his hands. The man offered the pigeon. 2 tiny beaten silver cylinders were attached to each of her legs. 1 would have been usual. Toranaga had to work hard to keep the nervous tremble out of his fingers. He untied the cylinders and took them over to the light of the window opening, to examine the minute seals. He recognized Kiri's secret cipher. Naga and the others were watching tensely. His face revealed nothing. Toranaga did not break the seals at once, much as he wanted to. Patiently, he waited until a dry kimono was brought. A servant held a large oiled paper umbrella for him, and he walked to his own quarters in the fortress. Soup and cha were waiting. He sipped them and listened to the rain. When he felt calm, he posted guards and went into an inner room. In privacy, he broke the seals. The paper of the four scrolls was very thin, the characters tiny, the message long and in code. Decoding was laborious. When it was completed, he read the message and then reread it twice. Then he let his mind range. Night came. The rain stopped.
O Buddha, let the harvest be good, he prayed.
This was the season when the paddy fields were being flooded, and throughout the land, the pale green rice seedlings were being planted into the weedless, almost liquid fields to be harvested in 4 or 5 months, depending on the weather. And throughout the land, the poor and the rich, Eta and Emperor, servant and samurai, all prayed that just the right amount of rain and sun and humidity came correctly in its season. And every man, woman and child counted the days to harvest.
We'll need a great harvest this year, thought Toranaga.
Naga! Naga-san!
His son came running.
Yes, father. At the first hour after dawn, fetch Yabu-san and his chief advisers to the plateau. Also Buntaro and our three senior captains. And Mariko-san. Bring them all to the plateau at dawn. Mariko-san can serve cha. Yes. And I want the Anjin-san standing by at the camp. Guards to bring us at 200 paces.
Yes, father.
Naga turned to obey. Unable to contain himself, he blurted out,
Is it war? Is it?
Because Toranaga needed a harbinger of optimism throughout the fortress, he did not berate his son for the ill-disciplined impertinence.
Yes, he said. Yes, but on my terms.
Naga closed the shoji and rushed off. Toranaga knew that although Naga's face and manner would now be outwardly composed, nothing would disguise the excitement in his walk or the fire behind his eyes. So rumor and counter-rumor would rush through Anjiro to spread quickly throughout Izu and beyond, if the fires were fed properly.
I'm committed now, he said aloud to the flowers that stood serenely in the tokonama,
shadows flickering in the pleasant candlelight.
Kiri had written, Sire, I pray Buddha you are well and safe. This is our last carrier pigeon, so I also pray Buddha guides her to you. Traitors killed all the others last night by firing the coop, and this one escaped only because she's been sick, and I was nursing her privately. Yesterday morning, Lord Sugiyama suddenly resigned, exactly as planned. But before he could make good his escape, he was trapped on the outskirts of Osaka by Ishido's ronin. Unhappily, some of Sugiyama's family were also caught with him. I heard he was betrayed by one of his people. Rumor has it that Ishido offered him a compromise, that if Lord Sugiyama delayed his resignation until after the Council of Regents convened, tomorrow, so that you could be legally impeached, in return, Ishido guaranteed that the council would formally give Sugiyama the whole of the Kanto, and, as a measure of good faith, Ishido would release him and his family at once. Sugiyama refused to betray you. Immediately Ishido ordered Eta to convince him. They tortured Sugiyama's children, then his consort, in front of him, but he would still not abandon you. They were all given bad deaths. His, the final one, was very bad. Of course, there were no witnesses to this treachery, and it's all hearsay, but I believe it. Of course, Ishido disclaimed any knowledge of the murders or participation in them, vowing that he'll hunt down the murderers. At first, Ishido claimed that Sugiyama had never actually resigned. Therefore, in his opinion, the council could still meet.
I sent copies of Sugiyama's resignation to the other regents, Kiyama, Ito, and Onoshi, and sent another openly to Ishido, and circulated 4 more copies among the daimyos. How clever of you, Tora-chan, to have known that extra copies would be necessary. So, from yesterday, exactly as you planned with Sugiyama, the council is legally no more. In this, you've succeeded completely. Good news. Lord Mogami safely turned back outside the city with all his family and samurai. Now he's openly your ally, so your far northern flank is secure. The Lords Maeda, Kokushima, Asano, Ikeda, and Okudaira all quietly slipped out of Osaka last night to safety. Also, the Christian Lord Oda. Bad news is that the families of Maeda, Ikeda, and Oda, and a dozen other important daimyos, did not escape and are now hostage here, as are those of 50 or 60 lesser uncommitted lords. Bad news is that yesterday your half-brother, Sataki, Lord Oshinano, publicly declared for the heir, Yeimon, against you, accusing you of plotting with Sugiyama to overthrow the Council of Regents by creating chaos. So now your northeastern border is breached, and Sataki and his 50,000 fanatics will oppose you. Bad news is that almost every daimyo accepted the emperor's invitation. Bad news is that not a few of your friends and allies here are incensed that you did not give them prior knowledge of your strategy, so they could prepare a line of retreat. Your old friend, the great Lord Shimazu, is one. I heard this afternoon that he's openly demanded that all lords should be ordered by the emperor to kneel before the boy Yeimon now. Bad news is that Lady Ochiba is brilliantly spinning her web, promising fiefs and titles and court rank to the uncommitted. Tora-chan, it's a great pity she's not on your side. She's a worthy enemy. The Lady Yodoko alone advocates prayer and calm, but no one listens, and the Lady Ochiba wants to precipitate war now while she feels you're weak and isolated. So sorry, my lord, but you're isolated and, I think, betrayed. Worst of all is that now the Christian regents, Kiyama and Onoshi, are openly together and violently opposed to you. They issued a joint statement this morning deploring Sugiyama's defection, saying that his action had put the realm into confusion, that we must all be strong for the sake of the empire. The regents have supreme responsibility. We must be ready to stamp out together any lord or group of lords who wish to overthrow the Taiko's will or the legal succession. Does this mean they plan to meet as a council of 4 regents? One of our Christian spies in the Black Robes headquarters here whispered that the priest Tsuku-san secretly left Osaka 5 days ago, but we don't know if he went to Edo or to Nagasaki, where the black ship is expected. Did you know it will be very early this season? Perhaps within 20 or 30 days. Sire, I've always hesitated about giving quick opinions based on hearsay, rumors, spies, or a woman's intuition. There, you see, Tora-chan, I have learned from you. But time is short, and I may not be able to speak to you again. First, too many families are trapped here. Ishido will never let them go, as he will never let us go. These hostages are an immense danger to you. Few lords have Sugiyama's sense of duty or fortitude. Very many, I think, will now go with Ishido, however reluctantly, because of these hostages. Next, I think that Maeda will betray you, also probably Asano. I tally of all 264 daimyos in our land, only 24 who are certain to follow you, another 50 possibly. That's not nearly enough. Kiyama and Onoshi will sway all or most of the Christian daimyos, and I believe they will not join you now. Lord Mori, the richest and greatest of all, is against you personally, as always, and he'll pull Asano, Kobayakawa, and perhaps Oda into his net. With your half-brother, Lord Zataki, against you, your position is terribly precarious. I counsel you to declare Crimson Sky at once and rush for Kyoto. It's your only hope. As to the Lady Sasuko and myself, we're well and content. The child quickens nicely, and if it's the child's karma to be born, thus will it happen. We're safe in our corner of the castle, the door tightly locked, the portcullis down. Our samurai are filled with devotion to you and to your cause, and if it is our karma to depart this life, then we will depart serenely. Your lady misses you greatly, very greatly. For myself, Tora-chan, I long to see you, to laugh with you, and to see your smile. My only regret in death would be that I could no longer do these things and watch over you. If there is an afterlife and God or Buddha or Kami exist, I promise I will somehow bend them all to your side. Though first I may beseech them to make me slender and young and fruitful for you. Let leave me my enjoyment of food. Ah, that would indeed be heaven, to be able to eat, and yet be perpetually young and thin. I send you my laughter. May Buddha bless thee and thine.
Toranaga read them the message, except the private part about Kiri and the Lady Sasuko. When he had finished, they looked at him and each other incredulously. Not only because of what the message said, but also because he was so openly taking them all into his confidence. They were seated on mats set in a semicircle around him in the center of the plateau, without guards, safe from eavesdroppers. Buntaro, Yabu, Igarashi, Omi, Naga, the captains, and Mariko. Guards were posted 200 paces away.
"I want some advice," Toranaga said. "My counselors are in Edo. This matter is urgent, and I want all of you to act in their place. What's going to happen, and what I should do?" "Yabu-san?"
Yabu was in turmoil. Every path seemed to lead to disaster.
"First, sire, just exactly what is Crimson Sky?"
"It's the code name for my final battle plan, a single violent rush at Kyoto, with all my legions, relying on mobility and surprise to take possession of the capital from the evil forces that now surround it, to wrest the person of the emperor from the filthy grasp of those who've duped him, led by Ishido. Once the Son of Heaven safely released from their clutches, then to petition him to revoke the mandate granted the present council, who are clearly traitorous, or dominated by traitors, and grant me his mandate to form a new council, which would put the interests of the realm and the heir before personal ambition. I would lead 80,000 to 100,000 men, leaving my lands unprotected, my flanks unguarded, and a retreat unsecured."
Toranaga saw them staring at him, flabbergasted. He did not mention the cadres of elite samurai who had been so furtively planted in many of the important castles and provinces over the years, and who were to explode simultaneously into revolt to create the chaos essential to the plan. Yabu burst out,
"But you'd have to fight every pace of the way. Ikawa Jikyu strangles the Tokaido for 100 li. Then more Ishido strongholds strangle the rest."
"Yes, but I plan to rush northwest along the Koshu Kaido, then stab down on Kyoto and stay away from the coastlands."
At once, many shook their heads and began to speak, but Yabu overrode them.
"But sire, the message said your kinsman Zataki-san's already gone over to the enemy. Now your road north is blocked too. His province is athwart the Koshu Kaido. You'll have to fight through all Shinano. That's mountainous and very hard, and his men are fanatically loyal. You'll be carved to pieces in those mountains."
"That's the only way I have a chance. I agree, there are too many hostiles on the coastal road."
Yabu glanced at Omi, wishing he could consult with him,
loathing the message and the whole Osaka mess, hating being first to speak, and utterly detesting the vassal status he had accepted at Omi's pleading.
"It's your only chance, Yabu-sama,"
Omi had urged.
"The only way you'll avoid Toranaga's trap and leave yourself room to maneuver."
Igarashi had interrupted furiously.
"Better to fall on Toranaga today while he's got few men here. Better to kill him and take his head to Ishido while there's time. Better to wait. Better to be patient. What happens if Toranaga orders our master to give up Izu?"
Igarashi had shouted.
"As liege lord to vassal, Toranaga has that right."
"He'll never do it. He needs our master more than ever now. Izu guards his southern door. He can't have Izu hostile. He must have our master on his..."
"What if he orders Lord Yabu out?"
"We rebel. We kill Toranaga if he's here, or fight any army he sends against us."
"But he'll never do that, don't you see? As his vassal, Toranaga must protect."
Yabu had let them argue, and then at length he had seen Omi's wisdom.
"Very well. I agree. And offering him my Murasama sword to fix the bargain's genius, Omi-san,"
he had gloated, taken wholeheartedly by the cunning of the plan.
"Yes, genius. His Yoshitomo blade more than takes its place. And, of course, I'm more valuable to Toranaga now than ever before." "Omi's right, Igarashi. I've no choice. I'm committed to Toranaga from now on. A vassal! Until war comes,"
Omi had said deliberately.
"Of course. Of course, only until war comes. Then I can change sides. Or do a dozen things. You're right, Omi-san. Again." "Omi's the best counselor I've ever had," he told himself. "But the most dangerous. Omi's clever enough to take Izu if I die. But what does that matter? We're all dead." "You're blocked completely," he told Toranaga. "You're isolated."
"Is there an alternative?" Toranaga asked.
"Excuse me, sir," Omi said, "but how long would it take to ready this attack?"
"It's ready now."
"Izu's ready too, sire,"
Yabu said.
"Your 100 and my 16,000 and the musket regiment? Is that enough?"
"No. Crimson Sky's a desperation plan. Everything risked on one attack."
"You have to risk it. As soon as the rain ceases and we can war,"
Yabu insisted.
"What choice have you got? Ishido will form a new council at once. They still have the mandate. So you'll be impeached today, or tomorrow, or the next day. Why wait to be eaten up? Listen, maybe the regiment could blast a way through the mountains. Let it be Crimson Sky. All men thrown into one great attack. It's the way of the warrior. It's worthy of samurai, Toranaga-sama. The guns, our guns, will blow Zataki out of our way. And if you succeed or fail, what does it matter? The try will live forever."
Naga said,
"Yes, but we'll win. We will."
A few of the captains nodded their agreement, relieved that war had come. Omi said nothing. Toranaga was looking at Buntaro.
"Well, Lord, I beg you to excuse me from giving an opinion. I and my men... do whatever you decide. That's my only duty. My opinion is no value to you, because I do what you alone decide." "Normally I'd accept that, but not today." "War then. What Yabu-san says is right. Let's go to Kyoto. Today, tomorrow, or when the rains stop. Crimson Sky, I'm tired of waiting."
"Omi-san?" Toranaga asked.
"Yabu-sama is correct, sire. Ishido will bend the Taiko's will to appoint a new council very soon. The new council will have the Emperor's mandate. Your enemies will applaud
and most of your friends will hesitate, and so betray you. The new council will impeach you at once. Then
it's Crimson Sky,
Yabu interrupted.
If Lord Toranaga orders it, then it is. But I don't think the impeachment order has any value at all. You can forget it.
Why?
Toranaga asked, as all attention went to Omi.
I agree with you, sire. Ishido's evil, eh? Any daimyos who agree to serve him are equally evil. True men know Ishido for what he is, and also know that the Emperor's being duped again.
Omi was prudently treading through the quicksands that he knew could swallow him.
I think he made a lasting mistake murdering Lord Sugiyama. Because of those foul murders, I think now all daimyos will suspect treachery from Ishido, and very few outside of Ishido's immediate grasp will bow to the orders of his council.
You're safe. For a time.
For how much time?
The rains are with us for 2 months, about. When the rains cease, Ishido will plan to send Ikawa Jikyu and Lord Zataki against you simultaneously, to catch you in a pincer. And Ishido's main army will support them over the Tokaido Road. Meanwhile, until the rains stop, every daimyo who bears a grudge against any other daimyo will only pay Ishido lip service until he makes the first move. Then I think they'll forget him, and they'll all take revenge or grab territory at their whim. The empire will be torn as it was before the Taiko. But you, sire, between Yabu-sama and yourself, jointly, with luck, you have enough strength to hold the passes to the Kanto and to Izu against the first wave, and beat it off. I don't think Ishido could mount another attack. Not a great one. When Ishido and the others have expended their energies, together you and Lord Yabu can cautiously come from behind our mountains, and gradually take the Empire into your own hands.
When will that be?
In the time of your children, sire.
You say fight a defensive battle?
Yabu asked scornfully.
I think jointly you're both safe behind the mountains. You wait, Toranaga-sama. You wait until you have more allies. You hold the passes. This can be done. General Ishido's evil, but not stupid enough to commit all his force to one battle. He'll stay skulking inside Osaka. So, for the time being, we mustn't use our regiment. We must tighten security and keep them as a secret weapon, poised and ever ready, until you come from behind your mountains. But now I don't think I will ever see them used.
Omi was conscious of the eyes watching him. He bowed to Toranaga.
Please excuse me for talking at length, sire.
Toranaga studied him, then glanced at his son. He saw the youth's pent-up excitement, and knew it was time to cast him at his prey.
Naga-san?
What Omi-san said is true,
Naga told him at once, exultantly.
Most of it. But I say use the 2 months to gather allies, to isolate Ishido even more, and when the rains cease, attack without warning. Crimson Sky.
Toranaga asked,
You disagree with Omi-san's opinion about a lengthy war?
No, but isn't this...
Naga stopped.
Go on, Naga-san. Speak openly.
Naga held his tongue, his face white.
You're ordered to continue.
Well, sir, it occurred to me that...
Again he stopped, then said in a gush,
Isn't this your great opportunity to become shogun? If you succeed in taking Kyoto and get the mandate, why form a council? Why not petition the Emperor to make you shogun? It would be best for you, and best for the realm.
Naga tried to keep the fear out of his voice, for he was speaking treason against Yeimon and most samurai here. Yabu, Omi, Igarashi, and Buntaro particularly, were open loyalists.
I say you should be shogun!
He turned defensively on the others.
If this opportunity is let go... Omi-san, you're right about a long war, but I say Lord Toranaga must take power, to give power,
A long war will ruin the Empire, split it into 1,000 fragments again. Who wants that? Lord